Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I'm doing laundry, so I hope everybody's ready for some great... It's our version of ASMR. It's laundry noises with Jason
just
and Dan.
Sit here, listen to the laundry.
The cat may come in at some point, but you don't know when. It's going to be like one of those Yule log kind of things, or one of those 100 hours of the USS Enterprise background noise, where if you listen, somewhere deep in hour three, a cat meows briefly, and then nothing more.
I was in a film class in college, and one of the movies we watched was, so we did a segment on documentary, then we did a segment on experimental film.
Uh-huh.
Before moving on to finally commercial narrative film, and one of the commercial narrative films was a Bergman, so like that was still
wow.
pretty
heady.
Anyways, in the experimental film section, we watched a movie called Wavelength, which you can look up. But I don't recommend you watch it because it is literally a 45-minute movie that is a zoom across a room, and the soundtrack is a sine wave.
Wow.
And at 3 points in the movie, like, there are, like, people in the shot that, like, come in, but, like, each of those segments is only maybe a minute. So, and the best part was, because this was a film class where we were talking about important film stuff, we watched it twice.
Oh my God.
So the only thing worse than watching it the first time is knowing exactly what you have in store for you and having to watch it again.
Yeah, we're all gonna be in this experimental film. No, I'm not gonna sing anymore, but there's a They Might Be Giants song in that.
I, Dan, had a
history of film class taught by a guy named Jean-Pierre Gorin, who was a French New Wave guy.
Legit name.
French New Wave guy. And his claim to fame was he did a movie, I think, with Godard. That it was called
Godard. Yeah.
It was called Letter to Jane. And it's literally a picture of Jane Fonda for the entire movie. Just a picture of Jane Fonda. And then they talk over the movie, over the picture.
Wow.
And that's the whole movie.
That's pretty good. We watched a movie called Weekend by Godard, which was a, like, all I remember
it's 48
like
hours
long. Yeah. There's a really long traffic jam at one point that's like a seriously like 10 or 15 minutes of them driving like through a traffic snarl up. Super weird. Also, I have to add, just, you know, you have your dryer going.
I do. Washer. We're spinning some sheets right now. Spinning.
I have a picture-in-picture window open with the sound muted, because I'm a considerate podcaster
way,
of the Star Wars panel that is happening right now, which apparently Stephen Colbert is hosting.
Oh, is this Celebration? Is that happening now?
Celebration is kicking off now.
Dang.
This is the Episode 9 panel is right now.
Oh, my God.
So Stephen Colbert is there.
So why are you on this podcast at all?
I don't know, Jason. Because Calendar is a terrible master.
That's why. Well, tell here, in the true unprofessional spirit of this podcast, unprofessional, that's a good name for a podcast. Somebody should do that. In the true unprofessional spirit of this podcast, I want you to keep me updated on Episode 9 news.
Okay. All right. So far it's just Stephen Colbert talking and showing pictures. So
that's great. Well, one of the funny things about the Disney, so I watched, as many actually incomparable people watched, because it was in our TV chat in the incomparable, we all were watching the Disney investors presentation yesterday afternoon.
It was a good time.
There was not a lot of news, although there was some. We snarked it up a little bit, which was kind of fun. And then I watched a rocket launch in the middle of it, which was also kind of funny. Several, you know, Kathy Kennedy and Jon Favreau were like, and we're off to Chicago for Celebration right after this.
Right.
So
they dragged Favreau out twice, once to talk about Star Wars and once to talk about The Lion King.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, those are big things. I also, by the way, this is a pet peeve of mine. Everybody is going to keep referring to the new Lion King as a live-action Lion King. I was so happy that Jon Favreau came out there and he said, first off, the 2D animated Lion King, and that's how he referred to it, 2D, not animated, but 2D animated Lion King, is a classic, and we're trying to honor it with our thing that we're doing. And then he specifically referred to their movie as a 3D photorealistic animated movie. And I said, good job, Jon Favreau, because that's exactly what it is. It is not a live action movie. It is an animated movie meant to look realistic. But like, those aren't lions talking, people. Those are CGI lions. I know. I also thought it was funny because James Earl Jones is back as, rather than using just use the voices from the old movie and make a new version. No, they have new voices. James Earl Jones, though, back as the king because, you know, you got to have Darth Vader.
Who else do you get?
Exactly. But Chiwetel Ejiofor as Scar, and I thought that was funny because it's like Baron Mordo versus Darth Vader happening right now. Or yeah, the mercenary from Serenity, if you want to go back to other classics.
I think people don't... there is some crossover between the Star Wars and Marvel universes, but I think Disney as a whole, because they're so big, you can't understate or overestimate
flammable
means
inflammable, Dan. What a country.
You cannot
the Simpsons
sanction
also on
or
Disney Plus.
Sanction. What was that called? The antonym? I can't remember.
Auto antonym game that played by nerds in Starfleet. For those who aren't watching Star Trek Discovery.
But the deals that they can put in place with all these people, right? Like the fact that they have pre-existing relationships with so many actors because they work in one of their giant franchise movies, and then they go like, the fact that they had to recast Michael K. Williams in Solo because he was not available for the reshoots when Ron Howard took over, and they're just right. Paul Bettany. We can just get Paul Bettany. We've worked with Paul Bettany a bunch, you know? And like the fact that they have those deep talent pools because they're a ginormous institution is nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, no, it's very true. It is true that they changed the name of Captain Marvel's cat because that was a Star Wars reference, and I think they didn't want to confuse people by having a different character named Chewie.
It's fair. I miss Chewie, but that's just me because I love Chewie.
Goose is cute. That's a cute name.
It works for the context. Your Star Wars panel update, J.J. Abrams and Kathy Kennedy are now there.
Oh, man.
And they're talking with Stephen Colbert.
They're going to show a trailer. If they're lucky, if we're all very lucky.
Oh, they're going to show a trailer.
if we're all very lucky, they're going to do what happened. They actually did this the last time, didn't they? What they happened on the Disney stream yesterday, which is they're like, let's show you the trailer. And then the stream goes, do-do-do-do-do-do-do. We're not showing you what everyone is seeing. And then it comes back and everybody's applauding. And you're like, hey, you're jerks.
They're going to show it. They're going to show it to everybody. So this is my first time during the new movie era that I have not been to Star Wars Celebration.
So you should be in the room where it happens, and you're not.
I know. I moved back. So basically the first year when I went, which was like when the year Force Awakens was coming out, my friends and I were in the room, literally the room where it happened.
Yes.
We were in like nosebleed seats, but we were there. The year of The Last Jedi, we couldn't make it or didn't get up early enough to make it into that room. So we were in an overflow room where essentially it was simulcast, but we weren't in that room. Now I'm in the comfort of my own home. So it's like every time I take like one step back. So yeah, it's a good thing that there aren't a lot more Star Wars movies, or are there? Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for the update. I have another funny thing that I wanted to bring up, which is I just turned in my Tom's Guide column, which I write every other week for our friend Phil Michaels, who works at Tom's Guide. And this week he suggested that I write about an interesting topic, which is about what happens if iTunes is broken up on the Mac. And I woke this morning to finish the column to see that this was also the topic of your Macworld column. So all I'm saying is, everybody, collect them all or compare and contrast. Dan and I apparently wrote the exact same column. And I haven't read your column yet because I saw the link to it and I thought, I'm going to write what I'm going to write and I'm not going to be influenced by Dan. Or
I'm sure we
Dan.
Took different angles on it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of questions about the breakup of iTunes.
Yeah, I mean, I as is often my wont, I am optimistic about it. I am realistic that one line that I'm very proud of in my piece, maybe you liked it when you wrote it in your story too, I don't know, is that iTunes will never be as popular as the day that it's replaced. Because on that day, everybody's going to be like, what are these apps? They don't do this obscure thing that I always did in iTunes, and they don't work the same way. And I'm going to go back to iTunes. All the people who complain about iTunes are going to then suddenly start praising iTunes because they're going to not like the new things. But I feel like in the long run, it is absolutely the right thing for Apple to do for a bunch of reasons, including the fact that individual apps are better than a single app you stuff everything in. Oh, podcasts. They're in iTunes. Music, they're in iTunes. Videos, it's in iTunes. No. I like a podcast app on the Mac. Great. Like, let's do that. So that's one reason. But also just the development. Like, let's be honest here. Apple's not investing a lot of time in app development on the Mac, right? And they haven't for a while, partially, I think, because they knew this was going to happen. But now Mac users are going to get the full force of Apple's focus on developing apps, because it's iPhone apps and iPad apps and Mac apps all together. And Apple doesn't have to waste time like doing maintenance updates to old Mac apps anymore as they knock them off. So I think in the end, it'll be better.
Can you imagine anybody at Apple wanting to touch the iTunes code base these days?
Oh, my God.
I have to imagine.
Well, I mean, Jeff Robin is still there, so perhaps he could do it. But, like, I think Jeff Robin's still there. I think it's just, like, you gotta let that go. Now, I also think, and this is my kind of bold prediction, is I think they're going to add features. I don't think it's going to be, like, what you see now. In fact, I feel like
the music app.
Yeah,
iOS.
I mean, my complaint about the music app, and I've said it on a bunch of podcasts, is that if you use that thing on the iPad, it's a joke. It's like, it's the iPhone app. Like, when you play something, it just puts up, like, a little sidebar saying, well, here's the now playing interface, and we're keeping the rest of it just on screen because why not?
What else can we do with this space?
And so I keep thinking, like, well, you move it to the Mac, you're probably going to have to actually have a conversation about what this thing works like on large screens that maybe you avoided with the iPad Pro, but you really need to do it now. But also, like, and this may not happen immediately, but I feel really good about the possibility that Apple is going to take this opportunity to, with iOS 13, to do a lot of stuff that's file-based, that to reform a lot of their kind of initial assumptions that there were no files, and make things more file-based, so that if you do buy an indie album on Bandcamp and get that download zip file, that one, the OS will be able to unzip it, and two, you'll be able to open those files in Music and have them added to your library. I think that will happen, partly because you need to find a way to get into the file system on the Mac, but also because why can't iOS do that too, now that you've got a file library? Why can't you have the ability to take some MP3s and play them in Music, or take a video file and add it to the TV app? So I'm optimistic that that's going to happen.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. I'm curious because I think
maybe
so
not
much
this
of
fall,
iTunes.
But I hope so.
Oh, sure, yeah. So much of iTunes was about getting away from files, right? Like, if you remember back to the pre-iTunes days of dealing with your giant, or maybe not that giant, MP3 libraries, like, you know, you would have the competitor apps a lot of times were like, oh, more like on a QuickTime mode almost, where it's like, open this file and play it back, because that is how files work. Whereas iTunes took sort of a different approach by saying, like, all right, we're going to abstract away. You don't have to worry about where your files are.
Exactly.
You don't have to worry about managing them. You throw them in a place, and then you use iTunes as the interface for all your files. And of course, Apple has taken that now in a bunch of different, like, the Photos app is like that, right? Like, Books is like that, right? Like, you don't worry about files as much. They're there because the Mac is built on them. And it's certainly, I agree with you that they've had to, when they tried with iOS, they're like, let's just take that to the extreme. There are no files. What's a file? You never need files anymore. And they eventually realized, like, yeah, okay, people do need files in some circumstances. So seeing how they walk that line of, we still want to keep it simple and not have to have you worry about managing files if you don't want to, but also, we accept that some of you are not using this, our one true monolithic way of dealing with this type of media, because, you know, it's just not practical.
Right.
So I agree. I think that it seems likely they'll get there. The question is, on the iOS side especially, it was always kind of that outgrowth of the iPod, where it's like, not only do they not want you to have to worry about files, but, like, they were concerned about you getting files off of it, right? Like, so the iPod library was like a monolithic thing where,
right,
for a long time, it's like, stuff goes in, but it never comes out again.
I imagine that's what it will be. Like, if they do file access at all, which, again, I think they are inclined to do just because it is on the Mac and you want to be able to get files into iTunes. I mean, they could put it off and say iTunes, no, you know, just use iTunes for that. But I feel like there is a use case for getting a music file off the internet and putting it in your library. And but I imagine it will be like, not like iTunes, where you can, like, manage it yourself and there's a folder somewhere. I imagine there will still be a folder somewhere, right? But I imagine it will be inside a bundle somewhere where you're not supposed to see it. And it may be that it only works for, like, adding things to, I mean, you can listen to music sideloaded onto iOS devices right now, and I think this is part and parcel of killing iTunes, is if you deprecate iTunes, it's not really dead, it's hiding away somewhere. you still have issues of like, what if you buy your music and download the files and don't and have MP3s and don't use Apple Music? Well,
right,
you know, Apple
right.
can't say, nope, you can never listen to music that isn't streamed on an iOS device. That's probably a bridge too far. They want you to stream music, but they probably can't do that. So you got to have a way to do that. And right now you can sync music onto your iOS device via USB, via iTunes.
Right.
And it's like, well, they're
right.
not going to rebuild that feature. But if they add the ability for you to transfer your MP3 files into the music app on iOS, you've solved the problem, right? And so
yeah.
I feel like maybe there's an iOS 13 story here, which is better file access that obviates the need for iTunes for a lot of this stuff.
Right.
Like,
right.
you're like, you don't need to sideload if you can airdrop an album, right?
Right, right. Well, I mean, that's the thing that's been tricky too, right? Like, as we've moved away a lot from the days when it's like you want to get a file onto your iOS device, you got to use that janky file sharing thing in the iTunes
same,
app, right?
Right.
Like,
so
we've got away from that mostly. Like, it's still
I use AirDrop now to add podcast files to Ferrite instead of
right.
using the USB transfer. Even though the USB transfer is a little bit faster, it's not as fast.
It's so inconvenient
because it's so much more convenient. And a little pop up comes up and says, "Where would you like to open these files?" Ferrite. I'm like, "Yes," and then it's done. So they could extend that even a little bit, and give you access to either AirDrop more things, like AirDrop your music to your iPad and or your iPhone, and they show up in the music app.
I assume you can do it now, just the music app doesn't accept it.
Yeah, like, I think that's
media
it.
Files can go elsewhere because apps can say, I can play music
and
files.
There are apps that will let you do that, but like the core system, because there are workarounds, but like the music app should be able to accept an album and just say, okay, it's in my library. Even if you're not an Apple Music subscriber, right, you should be able to AirDrop or copy a bunch of files to your iPad in a world without iTunes, right? Or to your
iPhone. Well, and it's one of the interesting things that's also changing with this dynamic of having Apple Music is we still have, you know, you've got your library, you've got Apple Music, you potentially have iTunes Match. I'm still paying for both. I don't know why.
You shouldn't, because iTunes Match is in Apple Music.
Yeah, but it's one of those things where Apple has started to shift. It used to be your library was the most important thing, but now because we have access to these giant streaming libraries, in which they've integrated with your library, it gets kind of fascinating in the way that you manage all these different types of stuff. Like, well, what about the stuff that I've had, you know, for 15, 20 years that's in there right along with stuff that's like streaming from Apple Music right now? And like, where does my library stop and the streaming music stuff begin? It's interesting to see them still managing that a little bit to these days. And that's one of the things iTunes operates, I feel like, much more on the paradigm of like your library is the most important thing and Apple Music is this other thing over here. Whereas the music app on iOS, I think, puts Apple Music stuff much more front and center.
And
some of that is just the UI choices they've made, but some of it is like the holdover of how the iTunes, you know, was the paradigm for a long time and is no longer. I'm interested to see how that works. I think I agree with you that like the good part of this is all the fact that iTunes has been pretty stagnant for a long time, and most of the changes have been in the wrong direction. Getting the chance to work and bring sort of new blood into designing those features and being able to tune them for very specific features, because at the end of the day, podcasts and music, like, they're both audio that you want to play back, but the similarities kind of stop after that. And iTunes always treated them like they were more or less the same thing, and that was problematic because, like, yeah, you there's lots of things you want to do with a podcast that you don't want to do with music, and vice versa. I think that will be really interesting, and it'll give, I mean, really, I'm trying to think, do I ever listen to podcasts on the Mac? Extremely rarely, and usually if I do, it's like in a web browser.
Yeah, there are people who do, and because like Casey Liss always talks about how he wants Overcast on the Mac, and it's like, that's a great use case where Marco, it's a narrow use case enough that Marco's not going to build a Mac app since he doesn't really know how to build Mac apps, but
right.
I will lay money that Overcast will come to the Mac this fall.
Well, sure. With the technology that's now that will be available at that point, it will be way easier for him to do that.
Right. He can literally just bring Overcast from iOS to the Mac, presumably. Like, I mean, maybe there'll be a hitch, but I bet you he'll be able to do that. And that's great. You mentioned in your column, I'm reading your column now, and fortunately they aren't that similar. So that's great. You mentioned Smart Playlists.
Different angles.
And Smart Playlists, I think, is an interesting one where I feel like Apple has basically decided that, at least on iOS and maybe in general, that most users just don't want this kind of functionality, and so that they haven't bothered. Right. And the example I give is not, I mean, Smart Playlists sort of, they sync to iOS devices, but they don't update on iOS devices.
Right, which is the probably, I would argue that's my favorite feature of Smart Playlists, is like if you curated I want to listen to this type of music, and you add music that meets that criteria, then that's great. It means your playlist is constantly evolving. But I also think that Apple sees it as Apple Music kind of, you know, supplants the
need to curate. I mean, and I think on one level they're right, which is in a world of streaming services, which not everybody is in, but like so many people are using streaming services, they've got curated playlists, they've got that whole For You tab. You know, there's so much going on in Apple Music, and I listen to Apple Music playlists all the time. I still listen to my own playlists, including Smart Playlists, but I can see it. And also, if I bring in my background writing about the Photos app, you know, there's Smart albums in Photos, and that never got put in the iOS version. So I think smart stuff in general, Apple just, at least on iOS, thinks is irrelevant. But I think it's not an iOS Mac dichotomy, because we have to read these two different things. Some of them are decisions Apple makes because mobile devices, especially since it originated on the iPhone, are different and use cases are different. That's part of it. And the philosophy of iOS is part of it. Part of it is decisions made by Apple in the year 2000 and decision made by Apple in this decade. And I think this one is a this decade decision, maybe informed by the fact that on an iPhone, you're not going to be fiddling around with Smart Playlists. But I think Apple just thinks this level of fiddliness and functionality that they is going to be used by such a small number of people that they're not going to bother.
I don't think they don't
care. It's possible that bringing it to the Mac means that the number of people who might use it goes up, and maybe they add it. And what's interesting, and I keep coming back to this as an iPad user, what I find really interesting is I think iPad users are going to get so much, in the long run, more power functionality than they would otherwise, because the Mac is also there. So there's this weight that, like, your generic iOS and Mac combined app, now there's more users with bigger screens who want maybe more power. And so it's still an iPhone world, but like there's more of the other kind of users. And I think that in a lot of cases, Apple, my hope is Apple's going to be making feature decisions based on Mac and iPad kind of lumped together in a way. And I think that's good for both the Mac and the iPad, that they're fighting together to get features that might not make sense on iPhone.
Well, and one thing that we talked about this week on Clockwise as well, and Jeff Carlson brought up a good point about a feature that, you know, I think we've talked about in the past that still doesn't exist, is the whole idea of like a handoff between devices.
Oh God, yes.
And it's staggering too to think like, well, now we're going to have the exact same app
actually get handoff between the music apps now. Imagine that. Wouldn't that be nice?
I would like to see that for the I'd like to see it for the Mac, the iOS devices, and the HomePod, frankly. Like, if I'm listening to something, like right now you can kind of fake it. Like, I walk in the door sometimes and I'm in the middle of a song that I'm listening to on my headphones, and I can, you know, bring up my iPhone and AirPlay it over to the office speaker with like relatively low lag, and it's fine. But, you know, once you get stuff on the HomePod, or stuff playing natively on the HomePod, not as an AirPlay speaker, then it becomes this weird little black box where it's like, I'm in the middle of a playlist on my HomePod. I'm leaving. I guess I have to start that playlist all over again. Yeah. Like, it's
and you
so
lose
weird
the stuff that's already shuffled through is
exactly
gone.
And like having a synced up next queue essentially seems like a kind of a no brainer, at least for an option. And I'm hoping that by unifying the code bases, it'll make it a lot easier.
Dan, Billy Dee Williams is on stage now.
See, now you're doing it. Billy Dee and Anthony Daniels is there, too.
Yes, and R2-D2 rolled by, but Billy Dee Williams, people. Billy Dee Williams. Lando is in the house. He's not wearing a cape because it's Billy Dee Williams and not Lando.
Right. That's how you tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's very close otherwise.
That's right. For your time-delayed Star Wars panel updates, because it's not like this is streaming live or anything. Yeah, the death of iTunes is way more interesting, or the, you know, discommodation of iTunes is way more interesting.
It's not going anywhere. I think we agree. It's going to stick around for a while because they don't want to build those features.
Exactly.
And people complain about it otherwise.
But adding in, when you add in Marzipan and iOS 13 and the next version of macOS, it gets a lot more interesting, right? Because this isn't just a story about Apple building some Mac apps to parallel iOS apps. It's literally Apple taking the iOS apps and prepping them for the Mac. And one would hope, and this is where I feel like my optimism may crash into reality, which is one would hope they do some things to make them better Mac citizens. It's entirely possible that in version one, it's just going to be the iOS apps. They're not going to be particularly changed. And if you want anything that they don't provide, you just got to go back to iTunes. Right. I'd like to believe that over time, they will evolve to be more functional, but they may not have the capability of doing much more than bringing them over in this first round. I hope the case, though.
I think my pessimism says that that's basically what we're going to get is like Mac versions of these. But I agree with you that once they're unified, one hopes that they spend a little more time on it. And it's tough, too, because, you know, there's been some talk about this week also with the I think it was in the Netherlands where they got sort of hit by people talking about like antitrust things in the App Store. And this is kind of the thing that's circled around Apple for a long time. But it's one of the tricky things in music. There really isn't an alternative on iOS. Like, there's not a good solid, like, why? Why would you spend any time building a music app?
It's like a general music player. You've got like Spotify or something, but you don't have
not a streaming service, but like music that you are listening to, right? Like, you're kind of locked in. So there's not a lot of incentive for Apple, I think, to update the music app, setting aside the Apple Music part of it. Mm-hmm. But like the features in it, there's not a lot of incentive for them to do that. Even less than in podcasts, right? Where there are lots of valid third-party podcast apps. So I'm kind of interested to see if the addition of the Mac, where perhaps there is more freedom to develop that kind of thing, might spur them to just be a little more defensive about adding features. I don't know, but it's an interesting dynamic. Like the podcast app, certainly, like, I think there will be a lot more competition in the podcast realm just because there is already a decent amount on iOS, and bring it to the Mac and Marzipan means that Marco and the Castro guys and etc. can build Mac apps much more easily.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Well, I don't know. It's going to be fun and fun. Like I said, I think people are going to get frustrated. There's going to be a lot of Mac angst this summer and into the fall, but and some of it is going to be justified, right? Like, I have no doubt that especially as those early betas roll out and as developers are exploring Marzipan, that they're going to be like, there's going to be enthusiasm, and then there's going to be kind of the crushing reality of like, that doesn't work right, or they made a disappointing decision. Because we always, you know, developers are like this. Developers talk about like, oh, we're going to have, this great thing that we can do all this stuff with. And then they realize, no, that's going to take like another 2 years before all those features come in. It's going to be pretty basic to start. And that is probably going to be the case. But still, huge. I keep talking up 2019 as this year of huge change for the Mac. But like, that influx of apps is really going to change the game. And the Mac has been very static for a long time. So I'm encouraged by it. It's not going to, you know, totally transform the Mac. And it's never going to be like, it's going to be totally different. But it is not going to be the same. And right. I'm excited by that, because I think there's a lot of there's going to be an influx of iOS stuff, and a lot of it's going to be bad, but some of it's going to be really good. And there's just so much energy put on iOS now. And I am also talking up this sort of Mac iPad alliance.
Yeah.
Because I think apps will get written for the Mac and the iPad that wouldn't have gotten written before, because if you put those audiences together,
there's a good audience
who could pay.
They're a lot closer to each other than, say, the iPhone and the Mac, right?
They like, really are. That's the funny thing,
I was
going to
say synergy, Jason, but I know how we both hate that.
All hail synergy. Synergy is the enemy of Calendar.
They are forever opposed.
Yeah, they're
in
brothers.
This epic battle.
They're brothers,
but they fell out. It's so tragic.
Yeah,
different ways of approaching the problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'll see. But they have a lot in common. I mean, ironically, since iOS, you know, bonded the iPhone and the iPad together, and the iPad has spent so much time as a big iPhone, but as an app platform, I feel like the iPad and the Mac actually have way more in common because they've got the big screens and power users and stuff like that. And so working as an alliance, I feel like, I mean, I'm very happy that Ferrite exists. I don't know if that was a good decision for Wooji Juice to build that app, but I love it and I hope it's a good business for them. But like, it would have been a lot better, a easier business decision to write that app if they had known that all Mac users could buy it too. Like like that would be, well, yeah, now it's a no-brainer. I can develop my app using my skills as an iOS developer and deploy it to the Mac as well. Like, that's great. And so I'm excited that they're going to get that addressable audience, presumably this fall or thereabouts. But I as an iPad user, I feel like we may start to see more apps written for both iPad and Mac because it, you know, it doubles or whatever the user base for those apps instead of, you know, just the iPad or just the Mac.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense.
That's my optimistic take. Anything else we should talk about? I mean, we've been here half an hour. They're still talking on stage in Chicago, so we could go if we need to.
I was gonna say that we sort of alluded to the watching the Disney stream yesterday, but I think it is interesting. So Disney announced that they'll be launching in November with $7 a month $6.99 or $70 for a year.
Yeah,
which a lot of people have talked about a bunch in terms of, you know, being worried like, does this smash competitors out of business, right? Because they're undercutting so much, and of course Disney has deep pockets, can afford to do that.
I will say nobody has a big commercial streaming service and doesn't have deep pockets.
Exactly.
If you don't have deep pockets, I saw, so Justin Marks, who is the creator of Counterpart, a show that I love that did two seasons and then died on Stars, where nobody could see it. I hope it pops up. It sounds like it's going to pop up on a major streaming service pretty soon, and then everybody will discover it and discover how amazing it is. Too late, but they'll discover it, and it does have an ending. Everybody should go watch it when that happens. But he basically said after the Disney Plus announcement, he's like, I know that I've been burned here, but if you're a small streaming service without a big marketing budget and a lot of money behind you, you should just give up. Like, the giants will own this. And I think that's true, that the deep-pocketed media giants will spend a lot of money now to own parts of this market. And yes, Disney only charging $7 a month is a part of that deal.
Yeah. Well, the deep pockets don't extend, like, they're not limited to the media either, right? Because, you know, Apple and Amazon and Netflix.
Yeah.
Well, all have,
they're all
deep
media companies now. But yes,
right,
they
yeah,
all
exactly.
Have,
I mean, it's not like Apple's hurting for cash.
Well,
there,
Netflix is enormously in debt, right? Because they're spending
money now
to be dominant, and Amazon is happy to spend the money. And quite honestly, Apple has the money to spend, and they're going to spend that money too. And so, yeah, if you're a small company, good luck with that, because you're gonna die or be bought out.
Mostly they're gonna be like absorbed by larger ones, right? Like, so you have, you know, I think it's mainly those premium, quote unquote, premium channels.
Yeah, like Lionsgate, which owns Stars, like they got to just get bought by somebody, right? That's just going to happen. Right. I don't see how they can stay in business otherwise. I mean, the channels idea is clever.
Have to be way cheaper.
I think is successful, but it may not be good enough for a lot of these.
If you look
things
at something like Stars, and I get a bunch of the emails since I signed up for Stars to watch Counterpart predominantly, and I now get their marketing emails like, "Ah, come back. We'll only charge you $5 a month." And I'm like, if Disney's charging me $7, and their library is like 100 times the size of yours, what makes you think you can get away with $5 a month, right? Like, you're now in the $2 a month.
You know, the one that I found actually way more useful than I thought is CBS All Access. And I kind of think that CBS and Viacom is actually an example of somebody who might get bought by one of the giants if that is allowed. It's unclear because they've got the broadcast channel and all that, and they've got lots of questions about their ownership right now. But I have seen the future, and like, CBS All Access does it right. I mean, not only are they dropping originals like Star Trek Discovery and Twilight Zone and stuff like that, but they are treating CBS content like streaming content. So like, the moment Survivor is off the air, Survivor is posted commercial free to CBS All. I pay for the commercial free version to CBS All Access. And I thought to myself, this is really smart because they are basically turning the entire CBS library into a streaming service and treating it like it. It's not the next day. You don't get the last five episodes. Literally every episode of Survivor for all 36 or whatever seasons is up there as a catalog and a whole bunch of other old catalog stuff. And, you know, it... If you want the stuff that's in their catalog, you know, that's debatable. They don't have enough. They're gearing up, but they don't have enough originals yet. But like, that is a viable product in a way that I kind of didn't expect. And watching a couple other shows on CBS kind of made that a better right. buy for me.
Sure.
But like, I see that as a way forward. I mean, the ABC stuff is going to go on presumably on Hulu because Disney owns Hulu. NBC at some point is probably going to pull out of Hulu, sell that off, and build their
right.
own thing. We know
well,
Warner,
Comcast's data, yeah. like, yeah, that's all. It's all going to get
right?
re-siloed
giant,
along different lines.
The giant
right?
companies are going to end up taking it. But yeah, it's an Apple. From Apple's perspective, they're not going to have a big catalog unless they buy some stuff. They're not going to have a big catalog. Like Disney was talking about how they're going to have, you know, 1,000 TV episodes within 5 years. They have all
right.
the Disney Channel stuff, and they've got all the Simpsons episodes. I mean, quite frankly, there's 300 Simpsons episodes right away, right? So
yeah, right.
There's a lot.
And you know, obviously, they spent a long time yesterday talking about brands, and this was the argument I made when Apple had their streaming service and had all these people out there talking about, like, the shows they're making. Is Apple feels like, you know, A-list content creators
right.
and what it can bring to the party, and Disney's like, they literally said during their investor meeting, like, we have all of this content and all
yeah.
of these brands,
their
and
app,
that is what we are leaning on.
The Disney app is literally organized around Disney, Pixar, Marvel, Star Wars, National Geographic.
And
pretty,
that's
pretty good.
It's fine. That
notice,
makes a lot of sense if you were them.
ABC not in there, which is
yeah,
fascinating
right.
to me. And I wonder what's going on with that and if they are doing something else with ABC to, you know, I don't know. It's kind of interesting that the ABC brand doesn't even exist there. But we'll, yeah, yeah, it is. These are big companies with big brands. Apple, I think this sets the bar for Apple where Apple can't go high. I think Apple's
yep.
going to have to start low, and they're going to have to suck it up, and they're going to get people to pay. Also, let's be realistic here. None of these services are going to be priced at a loss in the long run. They're priced at
right.
a loss at the beginning in order to make up market share and get people hooked. So like the chances that Disney Plus costs $6.99 in 5 years, I would say is zero. Right.
Well, I mean,
zero.
what service does stay at its introductory?
Exactly.
Rate? I mean, I think the biggest thing for Disney is it is, like you said, it's playing for market share. It's playing for volume. And I think that means they can probably afford to keep it low for a while.
Sure.
But yeah, there's nothing. Once they've got you hooked, there's nothing to stop them.
Yeah, then they boil the frog. So I think Apple
right.
will do that, too. My gut feeling now is that Apple just can't overcharge Disney
I was
for
saying
what they've
8
got.
To 10, but now I got to drop it down to like the 5 to 7 range.
I heard somebody predict, and I think they might be right here, that it will be a standalone service for like $7, $8, $9, $10, but that they'll do a bundle where it's basically
yeah.
free.
That is the most, I think that's the biggest question is
like,
with Apple, with all these other services at their disposal, how do they figure out a way to bundle those things? We're back to bundles.
Yeah.
You get your phone, your internet, and your cable TV there.
There was somebody on Twitter when I posted the price and everything yesterday who said, man, you know, they're making the cable bundle look like a good deal. And I've been saying that for 5 years, but people
yeah.
are only now realizing it. Like, the entertainment industry is going to get their money. Their need for your money has not changed as the technology has changed. They're not going to make it so that suddenly you only need to pay half of what you used to pay. The cable bundle
right.
is a bundle. It is a good deal. It's a good deal using old tech, but we are in a transitional process that is going to lead to a place where people are paying money that's roughly equivalent to what they paid for cable entertainment. And they're going to have bundles, and we're going to be back there because in the end, it costs money to make all these movies and TV shows, and they are going to get that money out of you like that and to pay, you know, sports rights and all those sorts of things. And like the moment where like cord cutting became like a money saver, I can save all this money and still get entertainment. That was a transitional moment.
Right.
Now, it's more a la carte than it used to be. You can just do Netflix. You can just do Disney, whatever you want. But
yeah, you're still going to have a fragmented amount of content.
It's true.
Because there's going to be content you want to watch from all these different services. And
there will be bundles.
Suck it up.
Like, Disney is going to bundle ESPN Plus and Disney Plus and Hulu, right? They're going to sell that as a bundle. So there are going to be lots of different bundles out there. Apple's going to have a bundle. And I think that actually is a really smart thing. Whoever, and I don't remember now, said Apple will probably, you know, have a price on it, but really expect you to buy it with Apple Music or with Apple Music and News or some, you know, some bundle product, the equivalent of what Amazon does, where they're bundling, you know, some, you know, a bunch of Prime services together for an annual fee. And so you're not getting one thing. You can pay for Prime Video on its own, but you really ought to just get Prime.
Right.
I think Apple will do that. And so there will be a price for Apple TV Plus, but realistically you shouldn't pay it. You should pay for the big Apple thing that gives you music and all that, which I got to say, I understand why Spotify feels so exposed and why they are buying podcast companies and why they are suing Apple and things like that, because we talk about media giants. Spotify is not a media giant. And if the future of music services is bundled with larger entertainment products, Spotify is kind of hosed, right? Like, that's an interesting angle to take, saying, oh, so I can get, I mean, that's why Spotify has a deal with Hulu, right? I think, where you get a discounted Hulu or you get the free Hulu or something. Like, you got to do that because the competitors are going to do that too. They're going to line up their music service. Apple, for sure, is going to line up their music service with their video service and some other stuff and have a bundle that's going to make you look bad unless you've got a bundle. So it's going to be fascinating to watch, but everybody, they want your money. Everybody's going to pay. You're going to pay.
Big year. Big evolving year.
$7 a month, $70 a year for Disney Plus. Like, I'm signed up. Like, sign me up now. It's a great deal. Yeah.
For that much content and looking at the stuff they're going to have, you know, Marvel and Disney alone or Star Wars alone.
The Star Wars and Marvel originals alone are probably worth it.
Yeah. Everything else is gravy on top of that. Whatever. Sure. That's fine. But Star Wars and Marvel is why they've got my money.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Well, this was fun. Next week, Kalandar, we must be rebels against Colin. Well, we might be able to do it. I'm going to be in Colorado next week, but I am going to have my microphone. So maybe we'll just do it at the usual time. It'll be 10 Mountain time. I could do it next Friday. So maybe we will follow Kalandar, even though I am removed from my usual.
Kalandar spans our globe.
Kalandar is everywhere, just at slightly different times. All right. Well, until then, thanks to everybody for being a Six Color subscriber. We appreciate it. We love you. Even you. You know who I am. Yeah. I know who you are.
I thank God they know who we are.
What? Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.